listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert. Rob Ferret is out this week. It's Food Friday time, and by now we're officially well into the barbecue season. So we're going to talk about something near and dear to many Wisconsinites, grilling and barbecue. Going to get some surefire tips from an expert on how to enhance your summer grilling experience. And we want to hear from you, too. Do you have any tried and true barbecue tips or techniques to offer up? And what's your favorite food to barbecue in the summer? Call and share your thoughts at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. Joining us in the studio now is barbecue expert Wes Ray. Wes is the head cook for Wanakee Barbecue, a competitive barbecue team based in Wanakee. Wes, welcome back.
Thank you, Veronica.
Well, the show has just begun with you here, and already I'm getting an education on grilling and barbecue. So apparently there is a big difference between barbecue, what we think of as barbecue, and grilling. What's the difference?
The primary difference from a competitive perspective or from a barbecue perspective is indirect cooking for barbecue versus direct cooking for grilling. So indirect cooking for barbecue means the source of the heat, the coals, or the flames are either in a firebox, which is attached to the cook chamber but not directly under the meat, or it's in the same place as the cook chamber, inside the cook chamber, but at the bottom, and there's a solid piece of metal between the fire or coals and the meat, so there's no direct contact or direct transfer of heat from the coals directly to the meat, because you're cooking that meat for hours or those meats for hours. So direct heat, direct cooking would result in a hockey puck.
And as far as what you do get from cooking it for so long, what does it do to the meat that makes it worthwhile to wait all that time?
Right. So what we're primarily achieving with the big meats, I refer to the big meats, generally the pork butt, one of the cuts of the pork shoulder, and the beef brisket, and with pork ribs as well, one of the things we're achieving is to gelatinize the fat and connective tissue. So that will be accomplished at about 180 degrees. And so once you cross 180 degrees with those meats, you're really starting to get the connective tissue, the fats, to soften, to become liquid, and to really soften that meat, spread the flavor more evenly throughout the meat.
And it's not about the sauce, then. I would have thought the barbecue was the stuff you put on top, but it sounds like it's the cooking method.
Barbecue sauce can add a lot of flavor, or as we'll say in competition barbecue, add another layer of flavor to a piece of meat. But by itself, if you're counting on the sauce to win a competition, you're going to be really disappointed.
Okay, that's good to know. Well, so what is the most important thing you need to know to accomplish a really great barbecue?
So for barbecue, I think the key is learning how to use your cooker and following a process that makes the most out of your cooker. Some cookers are built to cook hot and fast. Others really work best with the low and slow method. So you need to learn the cooker. And it takes time. It takes repetitive cooks to learn that cooker. So you learn how this one works, where the warmer spots, the cooler spots are, how the airflow works best, and then follow a process that works well for that. I have friends in the competition world, Tim's Full Belly Deli out of Oshkosh. They cook on Myron Mixon smokers. Those are great hot and fast cookers, and they win grand championships left and right with those cookers. My cooker is a Peoria cooker out of Peoria, Illinois, and that's definitely a low and slow cooker. You can cook hot and fast with it, but it doesn't do it as well, and so the results can be inconsistent if you try to cook hot and fast with a cooker that is really built to go low and slow.
Now, when you're using the word cooker, are you talking charcoal here, gas, what?
In competition, you can only cook with charcoal and or wood. At home, you can cook with whatever you want to cook with. But yes, we're using charcoal and wood in competition barbecue. You cannot use electricity or gas.
Now, when you're cooking a piece of meat or cooking for a whole bunch of people, how long does it take you to get from you putting that meat on the grill or in the cooker, as you say, to the time when it's ready to eat?
If I'm cooking low and slow, let's say I'm going to cook some pork spare ribs for family and friends, I'm going to plan on those cooking, well, they're going to cook for probably 2 hours before I take the next step in the process, and then they're going to cook another 3 or 4 hours, depending on how they're cut and the exact temperatures that I maintain the cooker at. So you start early, you cook the way you need to cook, and then you plan on letting them rest. You want to let the meat rest. And really, if you wrap them to rest and you put them in a dry cooler, it's the same thing that we cook things, keep things cold in, but there's no ice or water in it. You wrap them up, put them in there, and they can rest for hours.
Wow, so you're talking about a process of upwards of 5 hours.
Just for ribs, right. If we're going to do the pork shoulder, then you'll assume probably between, at a low and slow method, between 1 and 1.5 hours per pound.
Let's take a caller now. We've got Chris on the line in the Wisconsin Dells. Hi, Chris.
Hi, I have actually two tips. I marinate my pork and my chicken. You have to marinate everything. People that haven't gotten that are not, like, on top of anything. But I marinate my chicken and my pork in frozen concentrated pineapple orange juice, and it works wonders. But that's not why I called. I called because I had a summer with nothing better to do than perfect my barbecue skills. And so what I do when I buy a steak, and you get something fresher anyway, is I go into the grocery store or the butcher, and I have them cut the steak thicker than most of the meat you get in the store, like maybe 2 inches. And I marinate it in balsamic vinegar with it. What other kind of flavorings you want to put in it with that, garlic, onions, herbs, whatever. And I stab the meat with a knife so that the stuff gets up into it. And you take the steak out of the bag or the bowl, and you put it in the freezer, and you freeze it solid, and you get your grill really low but really hot, and you dip the steak in oil, frozen, and you put it on the grill. And you're going to get a steak that is crispy, crunchy, beautiful on the outside, and by the time it's done, the inside is going to be medium rare. And for people that don't like their meat, like, well done, and they don't want to sit and tend a steak endlessly, this works beautifully.
All right, Chris, lots of advice there, and we'll get to the marinades. But what do you think about that method of freezing the steak, getting a thicker cut, freezing, and doing it Chris's way?
The thicker cut is something I'm familiar with. It sounds like she's put a lot of time and effort into that process. So it sounds like she's pretty confident in her product. And if her friends and family get a consistently good steak when they come over, then I'm sure they'll keep coming over.
And what about the marinades? What do we need to know about marinades and how to do them?
Marinades and brines are very interesting. And Chris is correct that marinating or brining a meat will improve its flavor. Primarily, it helps the meat retain moisture. People should understand that different kinds of meats will absorb brines or marinades at different rates. Beef and pork are much more solid, tighter fiber. Chicken and fish will absorb the brine or marinade more rapidly and deeper. One example, we brined a pork tenderloin once, and we put a 6% salt solution in there with a little bit of sugar in there too. And after 24 hours, well, we measured it at 1, 2, several hours. And after 24 hours, the brine had only soaked in about 2/3 of an inch. So that's great because its purpose is to help the meat retain moisture. And where is the meat exposed to heat? Right at the surface. So that's where it helps it retain the moisture. It's doing its job. So long as people understand that brining or marinating is not going to get flavor to the center of the cut. Now, Chris, she counteracts that with poking holes in the steak with the knife, and that's fine. You're helping it accomplish a deeper flavor through the brine or marinate in a different way.
Well, what's a basic go-to brine or marinade that we can use when we're just starting out?
So the idea is 1 cup of, well, I should stop talking about cups because there are different types of salt. So let's talk about 1 pound of salt for a gallon of water. And how do we do that? I don't have a scale in my kitchen. How am I going to measure out a pound of salt? So if you take a 2-inch measuring cup and put 1 cup of water, and then you pour in a 1/2 cup of salt, and it'll go and it'll dissolve, and basically that'll get up to, you keep pouring salt in there until the measurement of water is up to 1.5 cups in your two cup measuring cup. Mm-hmm. Then you have 1/2 pound of salt in there.
Oh, okay.
And the reason you'll get different amounts of salt in 1 cup because there's more air in sea salt and kosher salt than there is in table salt. So 1 cup of table salt, there's a significantly different amount of salt in 1 cup of that than there is in kosher salt or sea salt.
Well, we're talking right now to Wes Ray of Wanakee Barbecue, a competitive barbecue team based in Wanakee, Wisconsin. He's giving us some advice to help turn out great barbecue this summer. And we're taking your calls, your questions. What's kind of been your sticking point when you tried to make barbecue? Do you need a little help here? And what is your go-to meal for a backyard cookout? You can call and share your thoughts at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post over on the Central Time Facebook page. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert. We're picking up our Food Friday discussion now about barbecue and grilling advice with our in-studio barbecue pro, Wes Ray. And we're taking your calls, too. Do you have a question about how to get the job done right when you barbecue, about how to make sure that your meat is just right, isn't burned, is tender, and is flavorful? You can call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. Go back to our callers. Now we've got Paul with us in Madison. Hey, Paul.
Hi there. How are you doing?
Good, thanks. How about you?
Cool. Well, I always have difficulty with ribs. I've got a smoker. I get it down nice, low and slow. I can do pulled pork great. I love my pulled pork. But I have trouble getting ribs done right. So do you wrap them up in foil after a couple of hours of smoking? Or, I've read a bunch of different things. What's your advice?
All right, thanks. Thanks a lot, Paul. Yeah, and ribs, a lot of bone there to go along, smaller pieces of meat. That must be tricky. How do you do it?
So Paul is correct. Those are a little trickier because it's a thin cut of meat, and so you have to have a process that takes care of both the outside and the inside of that cut. So Paul asked a question if we wrap them, and in general, they do get wrapped. You don't have to wrap your ribs, but it is a very good approach. So we'll cook those, and we cook spare ribs because in the competition circuit, that's pretty much what people do versus the baby back or loin back ribs. So we'll cook spare ribs, and we'll rub them and let them come up to closer to room temperature. Now, ribs don't take that long, so maybe an hour after we rub them, we'll just let them sit out, and then we'll put them on, and we'll cook them between, say, 250 degrees and 270 degrees instead of the 225 to 250. Lots of people cook below 250, and that's fine, but I'm just sharing what we do between 250 and 267 or 275. And they'll cook about 2 hours. But this is part of learning your cooker and how it handles each kind of meat. If all you do is cook to a schedule, and my friends Jeff and Pete with the barbecue team Smoke Syndicate, they reminded me of this recently. If you just cook to a schedule, you won't be handling each piece of meat the way it needs to be handled. So you'll start with a couple hours, and you'll check for that bark to be set, a nice mahogany color.
What does that mean, bark to be set?
So the bark is the way we talk about the crispy surface that develops on the meat.
Hmm.
And with pork butt in particular, or pulled pork, as it ends up pulled in the end, it'll get a bark that really looks black, and people will think it's burned, but if you do it well, it could be burned, I suppose. But if you do it well, it's really a nice, crispy, sweet, savory, with pork more sweet combination or addition to the meat. But with the ribs, you want the bark to be set, a nice mahogany color, not as dark as what I just described with the pork butt. And then you do want to wrap it in aluminum foil. People will generally, I don't know anybody who doesn't, so you will generally add some kind of moisture and or flavor enhancer in the wrap, and then wrap them up tight and lay them meat side down, because that meat is sitting in whatever it's wrapped in, and as its au jus accumulates inside the foil wrap. So lay them meat side down inside your cooker, and then you'll probably go for another 2 hours as a rough estimate, and then you'll want to remove them from the heat, remove them from the cooker, do a little unwrap, check how much the meat has pulled back from the tip of the bone. You want probably somewhere around a quarter inch pullback on the edge from the tip of the bone where the meat is. And then there are some other characteristics you're looking for too, but that's a good general start.
All right. Well, I hope that helps you out. Some good advice there about smoking and ribs in general. Another one that can be tricky for people, it's a little more basic, but chicken. A lot of people like to grill chicken, but it can get really dry really quickly if you're not careful. Do you have any advice for how to make that better?
One real tip I want to encourage people to get used to eating meat on a bone, which means cooking it with the bone. We know, or people may know, that you'll use stock bones, bones to cook stock, and that's because there's a lot of flavor and moisture in those bones. So cook meat with the bone. When we cook chicken in a barbecue competition, they're generally chicken thighs, generally either thighs or drums. And you cook it with that bone in there, and it really contributes to the flavor and the moisture. So I want to encourage people to get back to that, or
all
to
right.
experiment.
So no boneless, skinless chicken breast.
You can certainly do that, but that's a thinner piece of meat, and the bone's not there to contribute its moisture and flavor to the mixture. So the smaller, thinner the piece of meat, you're going to cook it. Don't cook it too quickly with the chicken because it's a tender piece of meat, and you'll cook it with the lid open because you want to keep an eye on it. Having the lid open, it's kind of like a burger or a steak. Anything that's less than an inch thick, you can close the lid, but you're primarily going to cook it with the lid open. It lets it get hotter, faster. It helps you keep an eye on it. You're not worried about retaining the moisture because you're going to cook it quickly, but you don't want to, and you want to keep an eye on it because if you close that lid and you don't check it often enough, pretty soon your moisture is gone.
Okay. Well, so bone in is a good place to
bone
start.
Bone in and
anyway.
Skin on.
All right.
Pull the skin. If you don't want to eat the skin, take the skin off after you're done cooking.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Right.
Simple way around that one. Well, how do you know in general when the meat is done? Do you ever use a meat thermometer?
So I know meats are done when I have a thermometer, for sure. Now, when you're doing long-term cooking, you don't want to stab the meat. You don't want to give more opportunities for the meat to lose moisture. But you know meat's done when it reaches the correct temperature. As you get better and better at it, you develop your process and your consistency, and you're more familiar with the meat, you have other ways to tell. Like I was talking about with the ribs, when the meat is pulled back from the end of the bones about a quarter inch, that's a good indicator. Another way, say when you're cooking burgers on the grill. Now that's a grilling. That's direct heat cooking. You put the burgers down. There are certain things you don't want to do with them, and we can talk about that if you'd like. But when you start to see the top of the burger sweat, that's a good indication that the center of the burger is starting to get warm enough, starting to cook through. And so that's a good indication when they're ready to flip. But we can talk about burgers if you want to.
Yeah, let's talk about burgers, because a lot of people might love to eat that barbecue, but they might not want to wait 5 hours. So if they want to grill up a hamburger, what's a good way to go?
The first thing I want to encourage people to do is remember that fat is flavor. So in grocery store after grocery store, you'll see ground beef labeled 85% lean, 90% lean. And I want to encourage people to start with a ground chuck that is at least 20% fat. You don't want to get a lot bigger than that, but I don't encourage people to start with ground beef that has less than a 20% fat. The next thing you want to think about is when you're actually making the burgers, you break apart the larger package and you're pouring them in your hands, presumably into about a tennis ball size and shape. Don't pack them. You're not trying to pack a snowball that you can knock your neighbor out with when you're having a snowball fight. Handle it gently, because if you're packing it all together, you're removing all the little bits of excess air space in there that when it's cooking, the meat, the fat can become liquid and stay right in there. Hmm. So don't be abusive and pack it really tight. And then when you flatten it a little bit for your patty to put it on there so it cooks more evenly, don't press it down so tight that you squeeze everything out of it. Now, people, as you cook your burgers, they'll inflate a little bit, or they'll call it a bloat, and that's because the liquid will move away from the heat source, so it's just naturally puffing up as the liquid expands and tries to move away from the heat, like I talked about the burger sweating a little bit. So, and then what do people do? They take a spatula and they press that burger down on the grill. You're squeezing out all the flavor and juice.
You're getting rid of the good stuff.
Well, the tasty stuff anyway. Right. Good is a matter of perspective, I suppose. But I encourage you not to do that. So how do we get rid of or avoid the bloat? Before you put it on the grill, take your thumb and just put a little indentation in the center of that burger. And then it will, as it expands, it'll expand out of that indentation instead of into too much of a ball that everybody feels they have to flatten. So the second thing, or the next thing I want to say is, cook your burgers, as I talked about earlier, thinner meats, cook them fast, and flip your burgers one time.
Wow, some great advice there, the thumbprint, and flip them one time, cook them fast. Wes, thanks so much. Great advice for the coming 4th of July weekend.
Thank you.
That was Wes Ray, head cook for Wanakee Barbecue, a competitive barbecue team that's based in Wanakee. Wes joined us to talk about barbecue and grilling tips for the summer season.